something that lives on your digital wish list, which means that you just won't actually purchase it. And eventually, at the end, we'll come back to why, if that sounds good.
That sounds great. The answer most recently is...
You were not supposed to answer it. Now what am I supposed to do at the end?
Oh.
I'm kidding.
We can cut that. We can cut that.
We'll come back to it.
Hello, and welcome back to the Commerce Collective podcast brought to you by Flywheel. I am your host, Emma Irwin, and today we are talking about incrementality. Again, we're going to cover what we learned in the last year and where we think it's leading us. And without further ado, let's re-meet our guest for today's episode, getting straight into it.
Gabe Fishbein, VP of Product at Flywheel.
Boom. Okay, you know this question. We've asked you it before, but I'm curious what the most recent thing you purchased on Amazon is.
I had to buy a replacement Kindle as I left my Kindle in an Uber in Miami, but then I was able to retrieve it via mail after negotiating a UPS situation. And so I'm returning Kindle Paperwhite back to Amazon, hopefully this week.
I'm impressed that you were able to get the Kindle from the Uber in Miami back to you.
It was complicated and arduous. I was just traveling, and so I pretty much only read on airplanes. And so there was a very tight time window, but we were able to communicate with him, and the Uber driver was very generous, and with enough financial incentive, he was able to send it back. He was delighted to send it back.
Perfect. Okay, I'm going to ask you this question. We'll come back to it at the end, and I don't remember what is on your digital wish list from the last time that we talked, if I even asked that. But I'll have to go back in time and figure it out. But something that lives on your digital wish list, which means that you just won't actually purchase it. And eventually, at the end, we'll come back to why, if that sounds good.
That sounds great. The answer most recently is...
There were totally no edits there. None at all. None whatsoever. Okay, moving on, because today we are obviously talking about incrementality for the third calendar year in a row, which means that incrementality has evolved and isn't going anywhere. Or so we'll see. To kick off this episode, we won't go on again about how incrementality isn't really a word, but I did ask Gabe to kick us off by telling us what his definition of incrementality is.
I tell a joke that is, if you get three people in a room and have them define incrementality, you'll get four definitions. And so I like to keep it really sort of simple, which is a sale that would not have happened without seeing an ad. Or it could have been a customer that purchased or wouldn't have purchased without seeing an ad. And so there's sort of like, when you get past philosophy into measurement is where you start to see all the different ways that people define it. But overall, it's just like, how effective is a specific ad unit or series of ad units that drive a user journey into ending in a purchase, culminating in a purchase? And so incrementality has really been the buzzword across a lot of different folks in the industry over the past year. And it's something that we still, you know, really truly believe in as a concept. And so it just sort of requires this shift in what you pay attention to. And so historically, everyone obsessed over ACoS and everyone obsessed over ROAS, but we're now sort of seeing the customer as this much more valuable person, that it's not just a purchase, but a person behind that purchase. And so it just, the picture expands to be much bigger than just like a ROAS or an ACoS.
What makes the person of more importance in how we're looking at it now?
Wind the clock back 10 or 12 years, and there were a bunch of brands that were building out these D2C businesses on the thesis that if you have customer data and you can build a relationship with the customer, they're going to be worth a lot more. I think a great example is Dollar Shave Club, which were just rebranded Dorco razors, but they raised a whole bunch of money, netted a big old sale to a large CPG. And what did they end up with? Distribution in Target. And so all these businesses were built to like, hey, if you know your customer and you can email your customer and build a relationship with your customer and get a subscription with your customer, then they're going to be a lot more valuable to you. The challenge is that nobody wants to have 50 subscriptions and get their soap from one place and their pillows from another. And so we're seeing this sort of happen in tandem with a lot of the clean room tech that's starting to come out. And so that is then giving the ability for the brands to begin to own a little bit more of the relationship with the customer in a privacy safe way, such that you can begin to say, hey, who are the kind of customers that I want to, you know, show ads to? Where are they in their journey? And then how do I measure grabbing a new customer or really getting a customer to switch channels into one that I can measure really well?
Gotcha. And so the last time that incrementality was really discussed in depth on the podcast, we went into kind of talking about at the time, the best approach really being looking at consumer behavior, like across categories, essentially creating these queries with some assumptions and searching for whether or not consumers are behaving in like this clicky or scrolly manner. And therefore that helps us understand incrementality at this very high level. But with more data and with like clean rooms, as you already mentioned, can you tell me about how like we're now looking towards the evolution of incrementality with more data beyond everything that I just listed out?
One of the big challenges, I think the clicky and scrolly sort of customer behavior isn't irrelevant, but it's just sort of changing. The retailers are continuing to increase the level of personalization in search results. So it's not just sort of where you are, it's not just what device you're using, but it's what are your past purchases and what do you have a higher propensity to buy. And so the historical way of sort of measuring incrementality was always like, let's take all of these averages across all of these different sort of, you know, weird data sources. Let's make a bunch of estimates and then sort of try and back into what somebody would or wouldn't have done and sort of subtract it from what they ended up doing. But like, you can't actually look at the people. You just have to look at like these broad-based averages that exist within your campaign metrics or whatever. And so it leads to sort of this incongruence between the thing that you want to measure and the thing you're actually measuring. And so the thing that you want to measure is the customer behavior, but the thing that you're actually measuring is just sort of like a bunch of averages and percentages that try and tell you what portion of your sales would or wouldn't have happened. And it's just, it doesn't have the nuance necessary.
How do we actually measure that customer behavior so that it's beyond just an estimate?
Enter the clean rooms. So I think anybody who's spent any time in any sphere of e-commerce over the last 3 years is familiar with these clean rooms that exist. And so what the clean rooms do is give you the ability to see customer behavior at an aggregated privacy safe level. And so instead of saying like, hey, what would or wouldn't the customer have done? You can now actually look at the data and say, okay, what hadn't they done before in the past, call it 12 months, that I can say deterministically they have not done, and then they exhibited a certain behavior. And so that's sort of the start where you can say, hey, somebody is now new to my brand and really new to channel, because we know that oftentimes, you know, people have not purchased laundry detergent for the first time ever in their life, but really that they're purchasing it maybe for the first time on e-commerce. And so you see a lot of this channel shifting behavior, but there's really this moment of truth where there could be a jump ball of, hey, someone is now searching for laundry detergent, no longer in the aisle at the brick and mortar store, but now on e-commerce. And so the subscription behavior, the repurchase behavior is so strong there that it's really important to capture that customer, not just figuring out sort of all the touch points leading up that give them a higher likelihood of buying, but also now you can measure the downstream impact after that first purchase of, did they buy that same SKU again? Did they buy another SKU within that brand? Did they buy another SKU in a different category within your portfolio? And so this then gives you the ability to remove all of that sort of funny estimation and say, who is new? How much did I pay to acquire them? How much am I paying to keep them? And how much are they actually purchasing?
Gotcha. I'm curious. So we're talking about like net new to channel customers, as you just mentioned, and then further tracking what they do down the line, which is their like lifetime or long-term value as a customer. But I am curious, can a customer be, or can a sale still be considered incremental if someone has purchased something from the brand before? So they're not net new, but is it possible for incrementality to like live on and span past that first new to brand purchase?
So it's sort of like, yeah, I think the question that you seem to be getting at is, if somebody were purchasing the brand of laundry detergent in the store, could you measure that they're purchasing it online and say that, hey, they might not be incremental? Is that what you're saying?
Sure. I like that. That works.
There's not really a great way to do it. I think that the next obvious question I think everybody's asking is, hey, how do you measure across these things? And the point of the walled garden is data can't get in or out in a way that you can map across. And so it's like, did somebody browse in store in one store and then purchase on e-commerce for a different retailer? You sort of like can't really do that. You can sort of use high level estimates. And so there's always sort of going to be that area where you're not going to see, which is so much why I talk about not just new to brand, but like new to channel. But really it's the shift of customers from a place where you were having to measure them in aggregate via the orders that you're sending to a specific brick and mortar retailer to the ability to now, in that privacy safe way, aggregate these customers and understand at a high level what their behavior is in a very measurable channel with a lot of signal and telemetry that you can then take further action on. And so that's really the difference. And that's the net marginal additive value that even if they're not incremental to your top line report to Wall Street like revenue, they're still incremental to your ability to measure them. And then you have the ability to drive additional value via further activity against those customers.
Got it. Would you say that advertisers are ready to be looking at incrementality in this way? I kind of think of like back when I was working in client services, like brands would ask about how incremental is our entire portfolio? But it's like, well, that's a complicated question. But are brands ready to be looking at it in this type of way?
Our goal as agency is to always push the thinking forward. And so are they ready? It varies brand to brand, but person to person as well. And so I see our job as much as it is sort of like measure and executor, it's also educator. And so we see this is a great forum. This is a great example, but everybody wants the same thing, which is sales. And so generally speaking, I think you could sort of look at it as like, what is the value addition to a top line number? And so however you calculate that, I think we're getting better and better and closer as we sort of try and tie the two together. And so are they ready? I hope so. But if they're not, I hope we can continue to bring people up to speed and continue to have them sort of pressure test our thinking and push back where they disagree or don't understand, and that we focus on really good principles and we get smarter together.
Perfect. And as you were talking, I was thinking about clean rooms in general. So what about measuring incrementality for retailers that don't have a clean room readily available to be using?
You get back to some of that funny estimation math. And so the principles generally still apply kind of cross retailer, which is like, were they going to, you know, on average, if something is ranked really low, it probably is more incremental. And you can do the subtraction with differences in ASP and like all the math. But like, you see many of the other retailers, the non-Amazon retailers, sort of subtly making moves to either build this kind of tech or build out some of these metrics, these new to brand or new to channel or new to category metrics that are oftentimes still a really, really good way to sense out, are the customers new, which is ultimately the thing that you want to drive.
Hey, it's me. Been a while, but this has been a good flow of conversation. I did want to come in and summarize things and reconnect us a bit before we got to the last bit of this interview though. I wanted to first get across the content in our last episode about incrementality from over a year ago isn't incorrect. We just now know more. We have more data, and we have another year's worth of research on incrementality to help try and shift the mindset away from funny math to real, academic, and deterministic outcomes or solutions. That was a lot of words in one sentence. Oh my goodness. Okay. Will we ever know the exact reason why in some exact moment someone decides to convert? I mean, come on, do you know that about yourself? Nah. But we are able to get better at measuring who is new to brand, how much they cost to acquire, and what they're worth in the long run. With this reframing of how we think about incrementality in just a year's time, I was curious if Gabe had a feeling that maybe incrementality wouldn't be one of the metrics that we push as something that matters not too far down the line.
Incrementality, I don't think, is a metric. And so it's actually like, this is sort of like where, like, we didn't totally touch on this yet, but incrementality is a code name for a different thing that you're trying to figure out. And so where I'd like to sort of push the thing, like I said, if you ask three people to define incrementality, you'll get four definitions. And so where we want to kind of push thinking is towards more specific, measurable outcomes. So new to channel customers, new to channel, new to brand customers, new subscriptions, like these are the much more measurable things. And then you get out of sort of the need to try and agree or disagree on a definition of incrementality. And I know that that sort of like stomps on the perfectly wrapped present that we built during our conversation so far, but really it's just getting much more granular and prescriptive about what you want to measure and then how do you optimize against that metric. And because the industry will not ever have a standard definition of incrementality, it's almost sort of not worth chasing as like a singular metric.
It's kind of like, what did you expect, that people were going to be able to define a word that was made up to begin with? Crazy.
Exactly. In 2020 is when we launched incrementality stuff. And it was like, we didn't even update the calculations for a while. And when you typed it into Google Docs, it was underlined in red because it was not a real word. And so I think we want to continue to just be more specific and more academic when it comes to something as important as measuring impact to your overall business.
And lastly, I needed to know what Gabe and team are thinking about for the future beyond the questionable existence of incrementality.
We're thinking of a lot more. I'll use that as a teaser, not to sort of, much of this is like half-baked. That's like really fun experimental stuff that we're doing around sort of some of the broader based impact to sales across a bunch of different dimensions. And so like redefining things is new to brand is like sort of like the first little scratch at it. But overall, just continuing to sort of advance the ball, not just on the measurement piece, but also on the actionability piece. So all of this is great, but like, can you affect any of these metrics? And so again, that's where this like clean room tech starts to become a bit more useful as you get into things like modeled audiences and, you know, other ways that you can influence some of these metrics in a way to grow your top line. And so this is the fun experimental stuff. And so it's sort of like, I like to say that we went from sort of CPC and ROAS to like CAC and LTV. And so it's just going to continue to evolve. It's going to continue to be measured in different ways. And so it's like figuring out how you manage against your measurement to drive the outcome that ultimately the client wants. And so it's working very closely with clients, hearing what they care about, and then just obsessing over chasing that.
And so what you're saying is that you should come back again in like a year and we'll talk about what else is up and what is either more fully baked or what is new and half baked.
Yeah, I will come back anytime you'll have me.
Hey, I'd love to go back to the digital wish list question that you totally didn't already tell me, but I'm going to something that is in a cart of yours that you won't actually purchase and why.
Yes. And so if you cut out the part at the front, something that's permanently on my wish list, I would say right now is the Apple Vision Pro. I have a good friend who has one and all the reviews of the thing are glowing. But people call me an Apple fanboy. I'd say that I'm like half a notch below that. But I've purchased many first generation Apple products, which have had some pretty regrettable shortcomings. And so whether it was my first Apple Watch in college or my first iPod Touch in high school, like the, you know, really, really far back stuff, there were always missing critical features. And I think because Vision Pro is such a new device, like there are certain like obvious misses, but I think as we get to like V2, V3 of Vision Pro, it's going to be really clear how much the thing is improving, both in sort of computational power capabilities, but also immersion and just sort of like quality experience and the weight of the device, etc. And so I'm really excited to try it on at the Apple Store and try my friend's Vision Pro, and then V3, I'll probably be plugged in and locked on my couch watching something in theater mode.
That sounds incredible. Would you buy V1 if you saw enough ads to the point where you were just ready to give in?
If you were to open my phone and open Twitter or Reddit, you would see that I don't really need any ads for the Vision Pro. I'm already pretty locked into a lot of the user-generated, organic, earned media, if you will, around Vision Pro. And so it continues to get me really excited. And I can't wait until the right time comes and I pull the trigger.
All right, I have one more thing for you. Flywheel's Retail Insights team is hosting a webinar on the future of retail disruption on April 9th that is open to anyone who wants to listen in. Be on the lookout for registration details for the webinar, but you will not want to miss all of the research and insights that'll be shared in this session. And if you're not already a Flywheel Retail Insights subscriber, what are you waiting for? If you remember our first episode of the year, Digital Retail Trends for 2024, that was all brought to you by the research from the Retail Insights team. that wraps up another episode of the Commerce Collective podcast. And gosh, we just love incrementality and new ways of measuring and watching the industry evolve. It truly is such a cool space to be in. Thank you to Gabe for his expertise here. And if you're listening and you want to learn more about incrementality, are interested in exploring our incrementality reporting, or you have access to it and you just want to dig in deeper, reach out to me and I will get you connected to the right people. That's my job. I've been your host, Emma Irwin, and we will see you next time.